Inside the Huddle with Sky Sports, Neil Reynolds and Jeff Reinbold.
Yes, hello and welcome to Inside the Huddle in association with SkySports.com and NFL UK. I'm your host, Neil Reynolds, and joining me, as ever, from North America, my colleague from Sky Sports coverage of the NFL, Jeff Reinbold. Jeff, how are you?
I'm doing good, and you know what? This is the last one we'll do from North America.
I know. So next week, put it in your diaries, folks, our podcast won't come out on Tuesday because we're going to wait until Thursday because Jeff will be over. So, Jeff, tell us it was end of the road for the Tiger Cats. How did the season end for you guys?
Well, like it ends for, you know, in the NFL, 31 teams, and in our league, 8 teams. In pro football, there's no bowl games. There's no, easy way to go out. You either win a championship or you're one of the teams that gets ready for next year. And we went up to Ottawa to play for the Eastern Championship and a berth in the Grey Cup, and, you know, had the game tied 28-28 with a minute 20 left to go, and had them second and 26, if you can believe this. And, and again, in our league, there's only 3 downs, so it's equivalent to being third and 26 in the NFL. And gave up a 98-yard touchdown and end up losing 35-28. It was really unbelievably tough way to lose because we had them. I mean, in that situation, we got to do is force them to punt. We'll be on a short field. Our kickers, had the best year of any kicker in the league. It just had a walk-off field goal the previous week, and this time we didn't get it done. And that's pro sports. That's the way it works. And Ottawa moves on and plays for a championship, and, you know, we start to go to work towards next season.
Rebuild, absolutely. So Jeff's hurting emotionally. Jeff, I'm hurting physically.
What happened now?
I got invited to play a soccer match yesterday at Wembley Stadium. So, first of all, the pitch is absolutely massive. And it was sports clients of Wembley Stadium against music clients of Wembley Stadium. So they put on, they made a great day of it. We had, we changed in the locker rooms where the England team, get ready for their big matches. We came out of the tunnel, they played music, they announced the starting lineups, and your names appear on a big scoreboard. I was starting up front. I was by far the oldest player there. And within the first 10 minutes, these youngsters were running around like crazy, and they were putting all these through balls and expecting me to chase them. So I lasted 10 minutes up front, and I was like, do you know what? Somebody came off at centre back, and I was like, I think I can play in defence, because if you read the game a little bit in defence, you don't have to run that much. So I went back to defence, and I now have a greater understanding of what Peyton Manning is going through, because my mind knew exactly what I wanted to do, Jeff, but my 43-year-old body was having none of it. There was one cross that came into our box, and I could see it coming, the ball coming. I was in perfect position. In my mind, I was rising like a salmon, and I was going to power this header away and defend our goal. And it was like I had deep-sea diving boots on. I couldn't get off the ground. I stumbled backwards. The ball went off the back of my head. I fell on my backside, and it went off for a corner. Now, technically, I defended that cross, but not the way I visualized it. And today, I can hardly walk, but we did win 7-2.
I tell you what, that is priceless. And there's a lesson in there. Just let bygones be bygones. And you're always better. This is so true. You're always a better player the longer it's been since you played.
So. Yeah, and you should leave it there.
Exactly.
I was humbled. I was humbled. Because when I played, I hadn't played soccer for about 12 years. And not even five-a-side stuff. And when I did play, I played to a sort of Kent League standard and was okay. And I was like absolutely shocked yesterday. My legs just didn't want to move. And my hips didn't want to turn. Nothing wanted to go where I wanted it to go. It was incredible. So it was good
and
fun.
I'll bet every single one of those muscles is telling you about it today.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, it was like wake up in the middle of the night with cramp and all that stuff, like you're 65 or something. Jeff, let's get on to some of the news from around the NFL. A guy who's not going to be feeling good physically is Joe Flacco. What a year for the Ravens, Jeff. They lose Terrell Suggs to an Achilles, Steve Smith to an Achilles, Justin Forsett to a broken arm on Sunday, and now Flacco to torn ACL and I guess potentially some MCL damage in there, which again, we might not be seeing Flacco throughout all of the next offseason and potentially start next year.
Yeah, I think that's one of those ones they're going to have to be really, really cautious with. Now, I will say, you know, the surgical techniques today, particularly on knees, are so much better than they've ever been, and guys are able to much more aggressive in their rehab and come off of these things, you know, much better than they have in the past. But anytime you have a surgical anything, it's, you know, concern during the off season. And, you know, how much of the OTAs, how much of the mini camps, how much of that kind of work is he going to be able to get? Now, he'll get the mental reps, but is he going to be able to get in there and mix it in with his teammates and throw the football? And it's going to be an interesting situation with the Ravens in this offseason because, you know, they made a transition into Mark Trestman's, you know, system, the West Coast system. And, you know, that's obviously a big departure from Gary Kubiak, what Gary Kubiak did. They've had all these injuries. They struggled on defense. I think there'll be some, not house cleaning, I guess, but just kind of a refocusing on exactly who they are and where they want to be going forward in Baltimore. And, you know, and sometimes that's not a bad thing. You know, that's not a bad thing. They're going to, you know, I heard John talk the other day about, you know, they're going to let some young players play now and give guys opportunities to show that they belong in the NFL. And, you know, that's the way you got to look at it when it's been as bad a season as it's been for them.
Yeah, and I guess not complete house cleaning, Jeff, but maybe a little bit of decorating here and there. Little bits and pieces, because the Ravens have lost every game by one score this year. This was a team that was up by two touchdowns in the playoffs on the road in Foxborough last year against the Patriots. So there is some talent there, but they undoubtedly have some work to do because Joe Flacco's cap figure next year is going to be about $28 million. So, you know, they might want to restructure Flacco's deal that he signed after he won that Super Bowl MVP award. But I think I feel with the Ravens, there's certain franchises you trust to get it right. And I think I kind of trust in Ozzie Newsome and John Harbaugh to straighten this out in the long run.
Yeah, and you know, this is an indication of just how tough it is to win in the National Football League and how precarious it is. Because again, you're talking about one of the franchises in the league that seems to always get it right and is always, you know, in the playoffs and banging on the door to win a Super Bowl. And this year it's just gone all wrong for them. But like I say, you know, if Forsett's gone and Flacco's gone and all these guys are gone, it's the same thing that the Bears had that tremendous opportunity when you know, Forte went down for Jeremy Langford to step in and show that he can be a player in this league. So that's what I'm sure they're looking for in Baltimore at this time.
Jeff, it's amazing how players that get towards the end of their career, the next young guy comes up. So, you know, Jeremy Langford is doing it in Chicago. Look at Marshawn Lynch, misses Sunday's game for Seattle. In comes Thomas Rawls and has a 255-yard day. Brock Osweiler impresses in his first NFL start with the Broncos. There's like there's always someone going to take your job. There's always a next man up.
There always is, you know. And you know, we talk to the players all the time about the sideline being the best tackler in football. It hasn't missed in 200 years of playing the game. But the same thing is true about Father Time. He never misses. Now you may avoid him for a while. But when Father Time gets you in his sights, and you're feeling it this morning, you know, when Father Time gets you in his sights and pulls the trigger, it's only a matter of time before the bullet hits, and, you know, and that's the end.
Yeah, Father Time gave me a right old kicking. I certainly have a new respect for Father Time. Colin Kaepernick's been placed on injured reserve for the 49ers. This happened ahead of the games in Week 11, but, you know, there's now speculation, Jeff, and it's not that surprising. There's speculation that he might have taken his last snap in San Francisco. I mean, I know we've talked in and outs of Kaepernick quite a bit on this podcast in recent weeks, but, you know, it seems like the contract is there for San Francisco to get out of it, and they might be inclined to do so.
I think you're right, Neil, because you're talking about a contract. See, this is exactly opposite of Jay Cutler, because I'm sure the Bears would have loved to gotten, you know, out of the Jay Cutler situation. Mm-hmm. When, you know, this off season and maybe even the off season previous, but that contract is just too big for anybody to pick up. So he's almost untradeable with that contract. You know, Kaepernick's deal is a different deal, and that's a much more cap friendly contract for any club to pick up. There's still enough memory of him taking a team to the Super Bowl. There's still enough tape of him making plays for there to be a, you know, a market for him. Mm. And, you know, if you're the if you're the 49ers, it's an asset, and you're certainly not going to let it go without, you know, getting something back, because you see every Sunday just how important that position is in this league. And when you've got a great one, and I'm not saying he's a great one, but when you've got anybody, you don't let anybody go at that position without getting some sort of, you know, some sort of compensation back, and hopefully it's in the form of either an opportunity to draft a quarterback or a young quarterback who you think can be a guy.
Cutler's a funny one, how that's worked out, Jeff, because he's kind of been coddled by coaches over the years, and this offseason he most definitely wasn't. John Fox wasn't singing his praises. He kind of put the quarterback on notice and said, well, you know, he's not going to get a free pass like he has in previous years. And Cutler's probably playing his best football of his career at the moment. Well, certainly his best since he's been in Chicago.
Yeah, the guys I know on the Bears staff that I talk to, you know, Adam Gase has done a good job, that offensive staff, and that's, I'm sure it's a directive from Foxy, that, you know, put him on a short leash and give him a few things to do. Mm-hmm. Don't put too much on his plate. And when, you know, Cutler has physical ability now. There's never been a question about his arm. There's never been a question about his release, his accuracy, any of those other things. Decision making was the thing that always, you know, was the issue with him, and then, you know, kind of his body language and his leadership skills. But they've tried to take as much of that off of him, particularly the leadership aspect, take as much of that off of him as possible and give him things that are easier done and require less of him. And it's been a situation where the Bears, you know, even though the Bears lost to Denver last week, I was really, you know, I've been impressed by how they've improved over the course of the season.
Yeah, me too. And last week they lost with there was no Matt Forte, no Alshon Jeffrey, no Eddie Royal. So they were missing some players, and Cutler kept them alive. They just kicked too many, excuse me, Jeff, they kicked too many field goals, and it was just those fine margins you talk about. Cutler has the opportunity to throw a back shoulder throw in the end zone to Martellus Bennett, and it gets he throws it in front of him, not behind him. And it, just tiny little things like that. But when you watch the game closely, you see that might have been where you had an opportunity to make a play and it didn't happen. But I was impressed with Cutler and the Bears generally.
Yeah, I think so. Doing the right things there, you know. They're making decisions for the future. They're very sound. They're starting to play a little defense. Vic Fangio's starting to feel his influence now a little bit, and that's what you want if you're the Bears. There's not all the drama swirling out of the locker room, and all the, you know, you don't hear Martellus Bennett going off now like you did, you know, in the years when Mark was there. And, you know, I think they've done a good job of, you know, uniting that team and getting them all moving in the right direction. And that is hard to do in the NFL when you got, you know, 55 different egos and 55 different agendas and 55 different personalities. And the great teams are able to do that. And I'm not saying the Bears are a great team by a long stretch, no, but they're making the strides to be a good team.
Yeah, I think one guy who we don't... God, I can't even talk, Jeff, let alone walk today. I didn't think I shouted that much yesterday, calling for the trainer. One person who doesn't get a lot of attention, we talk about John Fox, we talk about Cutler, but the general manager, Ryan Pace, he drafted Jeremy Langford. He drafted Adrian Amos, who's making plays in the secondary. We thought they were going to go through some kind of fire sale a few weeks ago when Bostic was traded to the Patriots and Jared Allen went, but I think he's taking a long-term approach with this team. And I think the new general manager there has done a good job in Chicago.
Yeah, you know, you talk about the Bostic thing and you talk about, you know, Jared Allen. Those are additions by subtractions, if you will.
Because they're
money guy, they're cap guys, first of all, and they're moving that so that they're creating space for their offseason to work, and then they're allowing young players to have an opportunity to show that they can play, and both of those guys are just not scheme fits for the Bears, where the Bears want to be right now defensively. Mm. So, you know, you got to give Ryan Pace and the coaching staff, you know, credit for having the courage to make those moves, because you're talking about guys that are, you know, name guys. You're talking about guys that have name recognition in Chicago, and it's very easy for the fan base to start to throw their hands up and go, well, what are you doing? You're getting rid of all of our good players, you know. But there's a plan, I'm sure, in place, and they're going to move forward that way.
Jeff, just one more thing on the Bears, then we'll move on. There are two schools of thought when it comes to coaching. You either adapt your system to fit your players, or you stick with your system and eventually get the players. And John Fox has a tried and trusted method that has seen him take two teams to the Super Bowl, two different teams. He's willing to, it seems, stick with his beliefs and his system, even if it isn't all the pieces in place right now.
Well, I think it's really interesting when you look at him, when you look at John Fox, and you go to his days in Carolina where he took the Panthers to the Super Bowl. What were their foundations? They ran the football, and they played great defense. Then he went to Denver and took a team to the Super Bowl again. And what were the foundations? They threw the ball all over the yard, and you know they never really played great defense. So you know Foxy's one of those guys that can adjust his X's and O's to the talent level that he has, particularly at the quarterback position.
Right.
But more than anything else, I think it's about the other things that he brings. The work ethic that they have, the sense of everybody being on the same page, everybody pulling together. I think that was where he and John got sideways in Denver, frankly, was that there started to be some mixed messages, one from John and one from he, and that it just doesn't work very long, and he knew that that was the case, and so made the decision, or they both made a mutual decision for John to move on. So I think, again, there's a little bit of both in great coaching. Number one, you fit the scheme to your great players, right? You don't fit the scheme to mediocre players.
Right.
And then you find the, when you got average guys, you got to replace them and get better players that fit what you want to do. And, I think in more than any place else in the National Football League today, and in pro football certainly today, it's the ability to fit what you do offensively to the quarterback that you have. And that's probably the number one thing when it comes down to, a scheme fit or fit the scheme question.
All right. We're going to take a look at Week 11 in the NFL. We'll make our picks for Week 12, and we'll answer your questions in the mailbag. But, Jeff, I had a lot of questions, or not really questions, but comments, from people wanting us to take this podcast on the road, take it on tour. I've got Richard George says, any plans to bring Inside the Huddle on tour with a crowd? Will Martin says, hope to see Neil Reynolds and Coach Reinbold on the road again. Hopefully they make their way up to Edinburgh. Nick Boyd says, we'd love to see you guys in Belfast. Graham Wilson says, I hope to see Jeff and Neil back on the road again. He says, Glasgow or Edinburgh, would that be excellent? Jeff, we've got some nice support there from our listeners, and I'm sure we'd love to get back out there. We always enjoy doing those evenings around the country, don't we?
Well, you know what? I think the two things. Number one, it's been tremendous, tremendous on Twitter. And I know you feel the same way. Just the outpouring of fans around the UK that want to see us get in back into the roadshow concept. It was such a success when we did it previously. Taking this show on the road, I think, would be just a really, really fun thing to do. There's so many great NFL fans outside of London. And while we can't bring a game to them, at least we can bring the show to them. And then I think the other thing, Neil, I heard Top Gear's not going anymore, so we could be the show in the UK.
There we go. That's what
Jeremy,
I like.
What's his name? Jeremy.
Jeremy Clarkson.
Yeah, Jeremy Clarkson. He's not doing his thing anymore. So you can be the Jeremy Clarkson of the next generation.
That means that I'll have to punch my producer in the face at one point, allegedly.
Tell Nick to start ducking.
There we go. All right, let's look at some of the games from Week 11. Then we talked about the Bears, but let's talk about Brock Osweiler. From what you saw of him, Jeff, he went 20 of 27, 250 yards, two touchdowns, and most importantly, no interceptions. So the Broncos have already said that Peyton's going to get a second opinion on his foot, and Brock starts against the New England Patriots on Sunday night. And this is kind of the way I expected it to go if Osweiler played well, that they don't rush Peyton back. And I said it before, the timing, I think Peyton's genuinely injured. I don't think there's any pulling of wool over the eyes, but I still maintain that the timing is convenient for the Denver Broncos because it allowed them to make this change to Brock Osweiler.
Well, here's what I just want to share with you. I'm watching NFL Network last night, and this is the impact of Inside the Huddle is spreading. I'm just telling you, right? And I have proof of that. Because last week we had talked on this podcast about how Brock Osweiler was a great high school basketball player in Montana.
Yes, you did.
Last night, I'm listening to Steve Mariucci, and he must have heard us say that, because on NFL Network last night, he said that Brock Osweiler was a great high school basketball player in Montana. So when you got those guys listening to us, the influence of Inside the Huddle is now worldwide. I'm just telling you.
Good to have you with us, Mooch.
You know, you're right, Neil. It is such an interesting deal right now. And the way Kubiak is handling it is really interesting to me. It's a day-to-day, week-to-week decision, right? Well, let me just say this. It's Tuesday, and they've already decided for this week.
Yes.
So it's not exactly day-to-day. And I think what he is doing, and rightly so, and in deference to, you know, Peyton's position in the game, he's not, you know, not saying what he, I think he would like to say is, hey, we're going to go with a young guy that's shown us that he can, you know, win, he can move around, he can do some of the things that I really like to do. You saw a couple times where, you know, they showed the zone and he came out the back door and they whammed the tight end through and he's thrown on the run. And that's Kubiak's offense.
Yes.
That's what he wants to do. That's his version of the West Coast, if you will. And those are the things that just, that's not Peyton's strength, you know, and what never was his strength. He's a drop back, stand in the pocket, make decisions, or, you know, full field read kind of guy. Brock Osweiler's not that guy, but Brock Osweiler can do some of the things that Kubiak wants his quarterback to do. Get on the edge, make decisions. It's half field reads, you know, you're reading 1 to 2, and that's not, and if it's not there, take it and run with it. So, for Broncos fans, this is, I think, a real encouraging sign. Now, it's one game. It's one game. The team they're playing this weekend has habitually made life miserable for young quarterbacks.
And Jeff, on that,
New England Patriots.
On that, Jeff, is it harder for a quarterback to do it week in and week out? Because we see so often young quarterbacks come off the bench, they have an impact, and then they might get one good start, and then the next start is not so good. And you listen to when they talk about that, and it's, people suggest that it's because suddenly you've got film. When you come off the bench, they haven't really got any film on what you do other than going back to Brock Osweiler in college. I mean, you know, it's a minimal amount of NFL film. But now Belichick has got a whole game that he can study there.
Yeah, and that's dangerous, because if you give him a lot of information, he's gonna you know, build a scheme around stopping you. And that's, I say, he's probably, nobody's done a better job. You saw it last night with Tyrod Taylor. Mm. Nobody's done a better job of making life miserable for young quarterbacks than Belichick has and New England has. And so, again, now Bill's got a whole game of tape to see what the young kid can really do and not do. And I'm sure you're going to see New England make moves to take away the bootlegs, take away the, you know, the zone read, and it's not really zone read in the traditional sense. It's more fake the zone and come out the back door and you know, half nakeds, rollouts, those kind of things. So you know, it is that tough thing for a defensive coordinator. Okay, all of a sudden you got this young gun in there and you don't know exactly what it is he does and does not do well, and you don't know how they're going to tailor the scheme to him. Now, the more film that gets out there, the easier it is for defensive coordinators to, you know, go back into the, you know, into the analytics and go back into the film and make a decision about what they want to do and what they're going to take away.
Jeff, this is a fascinating story on many levels and could end up being the defining story of the 2015 season. You've just approached it from a coach's point of view. They're talking about Osweiler rolling out and half field reads and stuff. But from a reporter's point of view, I'm fascinated to see how Kubiak handles it, how John Elway handles it, because I read a lot of the local newspapers for each of the cities, depending on which teams we've got on Sky that weekend, just to get a flavour of what the local media are saying. And last week, there were a number of articles talking about how Manning was the Broncos tried to nudge Manning into retirement early in 2015, before the offseason really kicked into high gear, and he was having none of it. Then Elway and Manning had to have an awkward conversation in which he took a pay cut, and then one of the stories, and it was kind of buried halfway down the story, but it was suggested that Manning was told that he was so injured that he wasn't playing in Chicago. It wasn't necessarily a done deal with the doctors. It was Kubiak had him in his office and said, you're not fit enough to play in Chicago. And they've kind of gone from there. So, because, you know, I guess Peyton is going to try and be out there week after week. But this is a sensitive situation. But it has happened, Jeff, throughout, you'll know this, throughout the course of NFL history. Joe Namath finished up with the Rams and was a shadow of his former self. Johnny Unitas was the same way with the Colts. Dan Marino got replaced by Damon Heward late on in his career in Miami and then won that job back and then lost to the Jags 62-7 in the playoffs. I mean, it happens time and time again. It's going to be interesting to see how the Broncos deal with it.
Yeah, it is. And you know, the thing that you're starting to hear whispers of over here is that he would like to play another year, even if it's not with the Broncos.
I saw that, yeah. I'm not sure.
And, you know, that is really interesting. It's just so hard when you've been a high-level player and you've had the kind of success that he's had to know when it's time to say it's time. And, you know, I the thing I keep going back to, Neil, is his daddy, Archie, was a great player at New Orleans, was really the first really good player the Saints had, and maybe the only good player the Saints had for a long time, and just got pounded into submission in New Orleans, and then went on and tried to finish his career in Minnesota, and it was just not a good thing. And you would think at some point, you know, Archie would pull Peyton aside and say, hey, you know, you've had a great run. Don't diminish your legacy by going out the way I did. And I don't know if that conversation has happened, but I sure hope it would, because, you know, I'm listening to the radio over here, the talk radio, all the people on the network, and now young guys are, and this is the way it works, right? Because the media is like a bunch of vultures. As soon as there's, you know, a carcass on the road, they're all picking at it. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that's what started to happen now. And, you know, people are saying he can't play. I mean, the guy is one of the greatest that ever threw a pass in the league, and I think we should all remember that as this thing plays out.
Yeah, I think first of all, Jeff, I was going to say the exact same. I've just written down on my notebook family, because I think that Eli Manning and Peyton Archie Manning should be advising Peyton Manning and saying, well, I don't know if you should come back in 2016. All Eli's come out and said at the moment is, I'd like to have a team that's 8-2, and I kind of get what he's doing publicly, but behind the scenes that there probably should be some advisement. Jeff, I get what you say. I don't think anyone's sort of, well, maybe they are, maybe that's the problem. Some people are taking pleasure in the fact that Peyton's in decline. You know, I get a lot of response on Twitter when you're negative towards Peyton Manning, but I think you can have an opinion on how he's playing now and what stage he's at. It doesn't mean you don't respect how great he was. I've maintained since he jogged off that field, losing in the playoffs to the Colts last year, we sat and did that game together, and I think I turned to you and said, I think Peyton should be done. You know, and I think he shouldn't have come back. I'd be shocked if he comes back in 2016. I think you're right. He needs to be treated with respect and to remember what great stuff he's done, but I think we still have to acknowledge he's not very good right now.
Yeah, and I think you can do that without being disrespectful.
Yeah.
My issue is with it seems to be, you know, guys, like I see the ex-players, some of the young guys, everybody's trying to make a mark in the media. Everybody's
headline,
trying to,
right?
Hey, did you hear that,
yeah.
Right? So I'm listening to this guy, Bomani Jones, this morning talking. I don't know if Bomani Jones has ever put a jock on, and he's telling I mean, I was just like, come on, man, are you kidding me? And then same thing on NFL Network. You get some of those young guys on there that, you know, they're going to just hey about what I said, right? The reality of it is he is one of the greatest players to ever throw a forward pass in the National Football League. And at this point, I would like to see him, personally, I would like to see him step aside and go out and, you know, in style. There's a tremendous picture. It's one of the greatest pictures of all time in the NFL. It's iconic, and it's of Y.A. Tittle on his knees in Wrigley Field in Chicago, I believe.
Yep.
And there's with his helmet off, and there's blood trickling down his head. And that was the end for one of the an icon of his era. And that's not the way I want to see Peyton Manning, you know, remembered.
Jeff, when I wrote my book on the toughest players in pro football history, Pain Gang, I had to have one image on the front cover, and it's that one. It's Y.A. Tittle on his knees.
And that's all you need to see, is that one picture, and that's not the way, to me, you want to see this guy go out.
No. Let's look at a couple of other quarterbacks, young guys who are seemingly having a lot of fun, and they turned up identical days on Sunday. So Jameis Winston and the Buccaneers, they win 45-17 in Philadelphia. Incredible result for the Bucs. Winston threw for 246 yards, 5 touchdowns to 5 different receivers, and no interceptions. Cam Newton led Carolina to a 44-16 win over Washington. He had 246 yards, 5 touchdowns to 5 different receivers, and no interceptions. Let's start with Cam, actually, Jeff, because I know I've said this before, but oh, the man's relishing the spotlight. There's no stage too big for Cam. You talk about quarterbacks that suddenly get in the spotlight and the stage is too big. Cam just seems to be happy that he's found the stage and he's on it.
Well, I think that's who he's always been. Back to his time at Auburn. Mm-hmm. You know, when he comes out of junior college, goes to Auburn, leads him to a national championship, and was really the whole team. He was the whole show. And, you know, he came to the National Football League, and the National Football League will humble young quarterbacks really quickly. But even when he struggled, he never wilted. He never shied away. The thing that's been incredible watching him is just how he has really, and you listen to the comments of players, offensive linemen, receivers, running back, everybody on his football team, defensive players, they all talk the same way. He is our leader. He is, as you know, when he goes, we go. Mm. And how in tough situations, when it's the worst for them, when they need plays, he just says, hey, man, follow me. I mean, he's got that kind of charisma on his football team. Now, his numbers don't tell you he's a elite level quarterback. They just don't. But the reality of it is, he's got an undefeated football team. And we always say this about quarterbacks, Neil. We talk all the time about the bottom line is, do you win?
Yeah.
Right? The bottom line, not how many yards you throw for your quarterback rating. Even though he had the 5 touchdown game, it's whether you win or not, and can you lead your team to victory? That is the bottom line in the National Football League, and this kid is really doing a great job of it, frankly, with, other than Greg Olsen, some really average guys.
Jeff, I haven't got the exact numbers in front of me, but I remember when doing my research going into last week's round of games, Cam's rating on the season is something like 86, 87, maybe 88. It's kind of in those sort of high 80s. But when he's behind in games, his quarterback rating is up in the it's between 116, 117, 118, something like that. It was a massive jump in terms of when he was behind. And that's what you want your quarterback to be doing. When the game's on the line, he's producing his best play.
That's exactly right, Neil. And I was going to say that very same thing. I want to know what his quarterback rating is when they need a play. A play. What is it when they have to convert on a third down? Whether it's with his feet or throwing it, you know, that to me is the mark of the great, great ones. Not, you know, can you be 25 of 27 for 200 and, you know, that's okay. I mean, that's great on that hand. But to me, can you lead your team to victory? Do you make the plays at the critical times to help your team win? The ones that can do that are the ones that are special. And that kid has shown that he is now, you know, a rising star in the league. And I'm really happy for Jameis Winston. Mm-hmm. I mean, I was not a – I didn't buy it coming out of – and I'm still skeptical, because the Eagles might have played as bad a defense as you can play. You give up 200 and whatever it was to Martin, the tailback, and you give up 5 touchdown passes – Just like their defensive coordinator said after the game, that was an abysmal defensive effort. That was the Eagles. That was bad, bad, bad football. But you can't take it away from Jameis. He made the plays. He threw the balls and got him there. So, you know, that's good for him, and it's good for the Bucks and like Lovie said 2 weeks ago, we're a good football team. I don't know about that yet, Lovie, but you're getting better. You're starting to show signs. And then you mix in Mariota into this mix, a guy that's had four touchdowns or five touchdowns in one game, also as a rookie. And it's, you know, kind of cool for the league because you got some young guys that are, you know, as Peyton and these guys ride off into the sunset, you got some young guys that are ready to jump on the horse.
Jeff, what's more worrying as a coach? If you give up on defense 400 yards passing or 200 yards rushing to a running back, does one scare you more in terms of the makeup of your team?
Exactly. I would, you know, you can understand in this day and age in the National Football League 400 yards passing because of the way the rules are and you know, it's the reality of the game. But when you give up 200 yards rushing, whether that was San Francisco's defense or whether that was Philadelphia's defense, you got some serious questions about your toughness and your ability to tackle and do the fundamental things well in the National Football League. Because in the NFL, and you know, you can stop the run, just commit enough guys to stop in the run. But when you give up, like Philadelphia did, five touchdown passes and 200 yards, and when you go out and tackle the way San Francisco did against Thomas Rawls. And Thomas Rawls, I hope he turns out to be a great, great player, but he's a backup running back. And, you know, you watched him just breaking ankles in space and, you know, running through tackles. And, you know, when the yards after, in his 200, what he had, 255 total, I think.
Yeah, that's right.
Right. But when you look at that 255, the thing that impressed me about it was how much of it came after first contact. You know, there weren't just plays where he had a hole and he ran 80 yards and nobody touched him. He's running through people. And I got major concerns, if I'm San Francisco, about our physical toughness. And I know that's got to be just killing Jimmy Tomsula, because that's something he's always, you know, that's always been a hallmark of the teams he's coached. But, you know, that's bad. And then again, same thing. If you're the Eagles, you got to really take some time this week and look really hard at a number of things. And first and foremost is your toughness and your ability to tackle.
And turnovers. Sanchez was being Mark Sanchez again. That's what he does. 261 yards, two touchdowns, but three interceptions. Tony Romo returned for the Dallas Cowboys. And the winning ways came back, Jeff. They're 3-0 with Romo under center. I don't think it was perfect. I think there was some up and down play from Tony, but I think it summed it up in the first half. He was going to get sacked in the end zone for a safety by the Dolphins. There was no score between the teams at the time. And Romo kind of switched the ball to his left hand, rolled to his left, and then threw the pass with his left hand, his wrong hand, out to Darren McFadden, and he picked up. He didn't get first down, actually, but he got about 15 yards on a third and 16, and it allowed them to punt the ball away and have better field position. But that just summed up Romo to me, and that can make players, because I think players on the Cowboys, Jeff, if that's Matt Cassel back there, they're probably running that route thinking this is a safety. I just feel like Romo makes them believe.
I don't think there's any question about that, Neil. I think that you watched the energy that they played with. For that's the first time you've seen that energy really, you know, in weeks. And you know, when you've got Brandon Whedon back there and you've got Matt Cassel back there, it's a whole nother deal. It's a whole nother deal for the receivers. It's a whole nother deal because they, you know, is there a trust that they're going to get the ball? If they run a great route, is there a trust that they're going to see the ball? No. When Tony gets back in the under center, you saw that different. They attacked the DBs. They really ran their routes hard, crisp, and that was, again, a reflection in my mind of having confidence in the guy that's behind the, you know, behind the center. The same thing's true with the offensive linemen, that, you know, those guys they struggle to pick up blitzes. They struggle to get out of the way of, you know, if there's a protection problem, they struggle to get out of the way. And like the play you just alluded to where he throws the ball left-handed, they didn't get a first down. But, and you know enough football, you've watched enough NFL, and you're smart enough guy to understand that 15 yards is critical, because it's 15 yards of critical field position. You're not punting out of your end zone. Now you're punting and you get the ball out past midfield and the defense isn't playing on a short field and all. Here you go with what we always call continuity football. Well, that gives them an opportunity. He gives them a belief that they have a chance to win. And belief, even though you say, well, how in the world can it be that big a deal? But believing you can win is so important in the National Football League.
Jeff, anything else in week 11 that caught your eye? I know you were busy with your playoff game, but anything else that really made you sit up and take notice?
Well, I just, you know, again, like last night, I'm watching. I thought the Bills did a great job defensively. But, golly, does New England just find a way to win?
It's James White, you know, now.
Yeah, I mean, here you go. I mean, geez, this guy out of Wisconsin that you never even heard of, and all of a sudden he's the guy that makes the play that, you know, that gives him a, you know, an opportunity to win a football game. Brady struggled at times, you know, but he's so smart and he knows where to go with the ball, and it's, you know, it's just amazing. And then at the end of the game, and the difference between teams that find a way to win and teams that don't, you know, young Sammy Watkins doesn't understand the rule, goes backwards out of bounds, and so, you know, again, it costs out of bounds to stop the clock. And he went backwards out of bounds, didn't stop the clock, and, you know, that's the end of the football game. Not saying that was the play that decided it, but those are the little things that, you know, don't show up on a stat sheet that, you know, great teams do, and teams that are struggling to get to the playoffs don't do.
Okay, let's start our look ahead to week 12 in the NFL. And Jeff, of 7 of the 16 games are live on Sky Sports this week, starting with Thanksgiving Day on Thursday. We've got 3 games and 24 hours of NFL coverage on Sky Sports. And I wanted to ask you, Jeff, actually, before we got into the games and making our picks, have you coached on national holidays, big holiday days like Thanksgiving Day or around Christmas and New Year's? And what's it like? Is it distracting for the players and coaches, or is it just another work day? What's that whole thing like for you?
Well, you know, I've been really fortunate because I've, you know, coached in New Year's Day bowl games, Christmas Day bowl games, you know, holiday games, Thanksgiving Day pro football games, you know, what we call Canada Day up here, which is Independence Day pro football games. It's a special, special deal because obviously people aren't working. The focus on the games is greater. The crowds are always better. The atmosphere at the game is better. The fans have the entire day to prepare for the game. It's more festive. All of the things that you would anticipate are there. Plus the fact that typically when you're playing on those kinds of days, there are other teams and other players and that are home not playing that day, and so it becomes, you know, a little bit like the Monday night games are, where everybody else in the league is watching you play.
So if you're playing a college bowl game on Christmas Day, do you still as a team sit down at some point, either before or probably afterwards, and have a Christmas dinner? Is there still any kind of nod to the holiday?
Yeah, you know what? When we played in, when I was at SMU, we played in the Hawaii Bowl on Christmas Eve. And it was late Christmas Eve because it was in Honolulu. Mm. So on, I think it was 2 days prior to the game, the university put on and the bowl people put on a big Christmas dinner for the entire team. And then as soon as we played the game, that night we jumped on a charter in Honolulu and flew straight back to Dallas so that our players could get home to Dallas at 8 o'clock in the morning on Christmas Day. And then they all, well, a number of them were met by their families at the airport, and then they all just took off to, you know, get home with their families and spend as much time with their families as they could on Christmas Day. But that's kind of a cool deal, too, because, you know, you're flying, you've just played the game, you get on the charter, you fly all night and get up, and it's Christmas, and it's really kind of a neat deal.
When you were flying back on overnight on Christmas Eve, did you see any sort of strange objects flying around the sky, a guy in a red suit? just checking.
No, we didn't. But it was kind of cool because we had beaten Colin Kaepernick that night, and you know, we were actually, of all the bowl games this year, the ESPN does a poll: who do you think is going to win this game? Who do you think is going to win that game? And you know, they had Kaepernick, and they're a good football team, and we were just turning it at SMU at that time. It was our first bowl game, I think we had the lowest percentage of fans in the country thought we were going to win the game, and we blew them out. I think we beat them by about 30 points. So it was a lot of fun.
Excellent. You guys had the last laugh. Let's make our picks then for week 12, starting with Thanksgiving. We've got Philadelphia at Detroit. Suddenly Detroit, who were absolutely awful at Wembley Stadium, have won 2 in a row. We know that Philadelphia are very up and down. This All three of these Thanksgiving Day games, Jeff, are quite tough to call. Who do you like in this one?
Well, I tell you what, the Eagles just scare me to you know, just when you think they got it going again, then they go out and just have a clunker like they had the other day. And, you know, Sanchez, you just say, come on, he's turned, I right now cannot with any kind of good conscience, pick the Eagles. I just can't, especially on the road in Detroit. Detroit is a place that forever has played a Thanksgiving Day game at home. It's a big, big deal in the Motor City, rather. And I think that, you know, they started to do some things better since they made some coaching adjustments on their staff. So at home on Thanksgiving and with Mark Sanchez playing quarterback for the Eagles, I'm going to go with Detroit.
All right, I'm going Detroit as well. Our second game is Carolina at Dallas. I can tell you right now, Jeff, short week on the road. Tony Romo is back. This is where Carolina lose their perfect record. I'm going Dallas to win this one.
I think this is going to be a physical football game. I think obviously the Carolina defense is a much different defense than the Miami defense, and Carolina has the ability to run the football. I just really think that the quarterbacks are going to be the difference in this game, and I think Cam's going to play well. As you say, the spotlight has not been too big for him. Mm-hmm. This is a much bigger national spotlight now, so we'll see if he can hold on. But I still think Carolina is a better football team.
All right, so you're going Carolina in that one. Chicago at Green Bay, at home, Lambeau Field. Packers got back on track last week. Big division win against Minnesota. 100-yard rushing day for Eddie Lacy. James Jones reemerges. Aaron Rodgers makes some big throws, but the defense was quite a story. 6 sacks of Teddy Bridgewater, so I'm going Packers.
Yeah, I like the Packers, too. I think they got their mojo back, got their groove back. And, you know, like you say, those 6 sacks of a guy that, you know, is not taking sacks habitually was a positive sign for the Packers, if the Packers will run the football.
Yes. Yes, they've got to be committed to that running game and have success with it. They could do against the Bears, though. The Bears is not a strong run defense. Minnesota at Atlanta, the first of our Sunday games. Not on Sky Sports, but just on my list here, just to avoid confusion. Minnesota at Atlanta. Atlanta literally threw it away last week against the Indianapolis Colts at home. They're a slumping team. Who do you like in this one, Jeff?
I like Minnesota to bounce back. I really thought they'd play better against Green Bay than they did. And, you know, I really thought after the tough start that they had in San Francisco, I thought they were trending right in a positive direction. They were playing really good defense. They'd showed a toughness under Zimmer that they hadn't had, and then didn't have a great game last week. I can't see that happening 2 weeks in a row. And, you know, I think the other team is headed, frankly, in the other direction.
Yep, I'm going Minnesota as well. They need to get Adrian Peterson back on track. Just 35 rushing yards last week. St. Louis at Cincinnati. Bengals have lost a couple now, but I still think this is a quality team, and they have too much for the Rams, especially with the game being in Cincinnati.
I agree with you. I think that, the thing that I saw last week in Arizona, which really, if you're a Bengals fan, you have to feel guardedly good about, is Andy Dalton's ability to make those 2 drives in the fourth quarter at critical times and make throws. That in the past is where he's crumbled. And I think that's another step in his, even though they lost the football game, I think for them as a football team, for him as a quarterback, that was a step to go on the road in that environment and be able to, you know, drive the ball twice to get scores when you needed them. So, again, I think that's a positive. I think the Rams right now have some, you know, they've got a bunch of stuff swirling around right now about their quarterback and whether they avoided the concussion protocols, and they're, you know, investigating that. And, you know, it just seems to be too much stuff swirling around the Rams right now for me.
Jeff Fisher said that he didn't see Case Keenum looking like he was struggling, didn't see that. How do you not see your quarterback, your starting quarterback, in the last couple of minutes of a game that you have to win? Surely, as a head coach, your attention is all on the quarterback.
Well, I think, you know, there's some onus that needs to go on Jeff, but certainly the league now has placed a person in the stands.
Absolutely.
Right? An independent person in the stands to call down and say that player needs to be taken off the field. And that's a great safeguard. but it has to, you have to use it. How was he not addressed by, you know, the training staff, and why were the protocols not followed, and where did it break down? That's, you know, again, there's going to be some, you know, there'll be somebody's going to have to answer up in this one, and it may be Jeff, or it may be the person in the stands, and it may be the training staff. I don't know, but somebody's going to have to come to grips with it. And it's just the kind of stuff you don't want around your football team.
No. I was having a little bit of a moan up about the concussion thing this week, Jeff. I felt like, you know, that league official has to see that, and you have to look after the players. And it got me thinking about the fact I'm quite a grumpy old man these days, and I wanted to get your opinion on something, because this is nothing to do with the picks. It's just suddenly entered my mind. And I know that sometimes you're quite a traditionalist. What do you think of the Thursday night uniforms?
Stink.
Do you see what the Jags were wearing?
Awful. Can I say, let me give you, I could probably come up with about 7 more adverbs or adjectives or whatever they are, but I don't think you can say them on the radio. Those uniforms are awful. I mean, awful. The worst of all were the Christmas ornament uniforms in the Buffalo
Jets
game. Those were hideous. The only thing worse are those NFL Christmas sweaters that are starting to pop up now. If they make the coaches coach in those, then I'm out.
Well, I have to disagree with you, Jeff, because I love the Christmas jumpers, and I hated the Jags uniform. They look like they've fallen in a vat of mustard.
Yeah, they really do look like. Oh. I mean, they look like bad. You know, this would be hard for you to visualize, I suppose, but softball is kind of a big thing in America,
right?
And it's where you know, guys that are done playing baseball, they go to continue to play till there's some guys in their 50s, and traditionally softball's teams are sponsored by some bar or some business or whatever, and they get the most outlandish, garish uniforms you could possibly find. And yeah. I swear they got these uniforms at the fire sale at the softball team.
Well, then they play 16 games, and you stick them in a, you know, you've got a home jersey and away jersey. Then every now and then they'll wear an alternate jersey, and then they wear the throwback jersey. Now they're wearing the Color Rush jersey. I mean, it's like, if this league ain't broke, don't fix it. You know, there's nothing wrong with a team just wearing plain white and a team wearing plain red. There's nothing wrong with that. Whatever's easiest to watch.
I think, frankly, is this is a lesson that we've learned from the Premiership, frankly, and that you see teams in all the different kits, and it's a way to push the merchandising. So now you get the Color Rush jersey, and you get the throwback jersey, and you get the home Adrian Peterson jersey, and the road Adrian Peterson jersey. Well, that's 4 jerseys you got to buy.
Yeah.
So, you know, again, I think it's another way of, you know, pushing the envelope, because this league is about one thing, and that's about money.
Yeah. Well, if you're going to part with your money to buy that Jags uniform, then you need to be in a straitjacket. That's all I'm going to say.
I don't know. Maybe you buy it because the Jags are undefeated in the Color Rush jersey.
Oh, don't start that. I'll be wearing it all the time. Anyway, I digress. Let's get back to the games. And our picks. New Orleans at Houston. Texans have won 3 in a row. DeAndre Hopkins is looking really good on offense as well. It's in Houston. I'm going to say that Houston keep rolling and beat the New Orleans Saints.
You know what?
I see Rob's comments?
I turned on the network the other day, and there's Rob. And typical Rob, he says, you know, everything that went bad in New Orleans got blamed on me. I think they even blamed Katrina on me now.
I know. Oh, Rob, what are you doing? And he said they were the 33rd best defense in the NFL.
Yeah, he said, well, I understand why they got to make a move, because we were ranked 33rd in the NFL and there's only 32 teams. He's priceless. Now, you got to admit that.
He's absolutely priceless. He's bouncing back.
I don't think, again, the emotional side of me would like to see Houston put 50 on them, but I don't think that's going to happen. I just Houston's got, you know, got a little bump, but I don't, you know, I just don't. Oof, I don't think they're a great football team. They got a couple weapons. DeAndre Hopkins is a really, really fine player, and obviously J.J. Watt on defense. But I just think that New Orleans will bounce back, and I think, you know, they'll, you know, this there seems to this. typically happens when you have one of these kinds of changeovers, right? They can offload all the baggage, like Rob said, on him and then start fresh this week. And I think the Saints will bounce back, frankly.
All right, let's fly through a couple of these games, Jeff, because we're getting a bit short on time. Tampa Bay at Indianapolis. I like the Colts at home.
I do too.
All right. And San Diego at Jacksonville. So San Diego have lost, what's it, six in a row now. I think Jags will get this one at home. I think Jacksonville will win this one.
I think the Jags will. And you know what? The Jags are just about starting to flirt around with, don't use the P word, but we may be using the P word in Jacksonville.
Absolutely. Buffalo at Kansas City. Chiefs have won four in a row. If we're talking P word, you wouldn't want to face the Chiefs in the playoffs at the moment.
Nope. Good. They're starting to, everybody left them for dead 3 weeks ago. Mm. And now, they're starting to play a little bit. I like Kansas City.
You going Kansas City in that one?
Mm-hmm.
Yep, me too. Both going Chiefs in that one. Miami at the Jets. I don't believe in the Dolphins, but the Jets have lost four of their last five. This is a pick'em game. You can take either of these two also-rans in the AFC East at the moment. I'll probably pick the Jets at home.
I would normally pick the Jets at home, but boy, oh boy, I picked up a New York Times yesterday and I read Todd Bowles' comments about where his football team is right now. And, I'm going to take Miami.
All right. You're taking Miami in that one. Oakland at Tennessee. Raiders have dropped a couple. And it's interesting. Oh, they've lost three in a row, actually. It's interesting when you always talk about having to handle adversity. Well, young teams have got to try and learn to handle success as well. The Raiders were 4-3. Now they're 4-6. But I'm going to take them to win in Tennessee. But that's the other side of the coin, isn't it? You have to handle winning and keep it up.
Yeah, and again, to be able to put it aside, right, evaluate it, feel good about what you did well, fix what you didn't do well, and get on to the next game. That's absolutely critical. The tendency is to get what Mark Trestman always used to call when we were in Montreal. He said, don't be getting a success flu. And, yeah. that's a dangerous strain of flu because it can cause you to lose three in a row, which is what has happened in Oakland. But I think the Raiders will right themselves in Tennessee. Tennessee just, even though Mariota's going to be a great one, I just don't think they have enough stuff around him right now.
All right. This is the first of our three live games on Sky Sports on Sunday evening. The New York Giants at the Washington Redskins. Washington are 4-1 at home this year. They're 4-1 at home. They play very well in front of their own fans. I'm actually going to go with the Giants in this one, though, Jeff. I think they're the better team.
See, I think they are. But again, I think the Giants are one of those teams that, you wonder about. And the Redskins are, they're showing signs of life under Jay. And I'm happy for them. And I think that they're going to get this one at home and burst right back into the playoff hunt in the East.
Yeah, they would be right in the thick of that. So you're going Redskins in that one. Arizona at San Francisco. Cardinals showed on Sunday night again. They're one of the most entertaining teams in the NFL. They've got a genuine MVP candidate in Carson Palmer. Could be another Coach of the Year honor for Bruce Arians. I like the Cardinals to beat the 49ers, even though it's in San Francisco.
No question. I think the Cardinals are, one of the teams to watch now as we go into that stretch into the playoffs. If they can stay healthy and stay focused, that's a team that can make a deep run.
All right. Pittsburgh at Seattle is our second game on Sky Sports on Sunday night. And this is interesting, Jeff, because that Seattle is not the fortress it once was. They've lost two of their last three there. Pittsburgh have some offensive weaponry to concern that defense. It's a tough one to call because of that. I'm probably going Seattle because of the home field advantage, but I wouldn't be surprised if Pittsburgh emerged with the win.
I'm going to take Seattle, too. I just, again, up there, and I think that Thomas Rawls, here's a guy that rushes for, 200 yards in the game and behind an offensive line that everybody keeps talking about how bad they are. Well, all of a sudden they didn't get good in 1 week, so I think that guy is a catalyst for them and really fits what they want to do. So I'm going to take Seattle at home.
All right. Sunday night football is New England at Denver. So I think we'll see continued decent play from Osweiler, but I'm with you on the whole Patriots resiliency and finding a way to win. I'm going to go New England in that one.
This is going to be a fun one to watch because of the fact you got a great defensive mastermind on one side against a rookie quarterback, and on the other side you got a great defense against a great quarterback who's lost some of his weapons. So I just think until you show me that you can beat Bill Belichick and New England, I'm going to just keep picking them.
All right, both going New England. And wrapping out week 12 in the NFL, the big game of the week, the Monday Night Football clash, Baltimore at Cleveland.
Just when you think it's safe to go back in the water, Johnny Manziel, a video surfaces of him popping champagne corks and partying. And you just got to wonder, don't you? If you're the ownership in Cleveland, you just got to say, wow.
Yeah, I'm going to go Baltimore because I think they're the better team, even though they've got no stars left.
I agree with you. I think they're a more grounded football team, and I think they'll rally up. I think John will do a good job with that and get them to play. I really feel bad for Mike Pettine because I think he's a good football coach, probably a pretty good guy. But boy, oh boy, he took a job that is a cesspool.
Yeah. A couple of quick questions from the mailbag then to finish off. Paul Nern asks, Jeff, does there come a point where you just cannot keep overcoming injuries despite how good you are? I guess it depends on the position, isn't it, Jeff, some of the time?
Well, I think our football team is a perfect example of that. You know, we're 8-3 to start the season and playing extremely well. Zach Collars, our quarterback, is just playing lights out. We lose him to an ACL, and you know, we start the playoffs with Jeremiah Mazzoli, our fourth string quarterback. At some point, and he played his heart out in the playoff game, but down the stretch, you know, we couldn't get it done, and particularly when you start losing guys at the quarterback position, and then you know it's really, really difficult. At some point, there's a point where every football team, you just deplete the talent level that you have, and it makes it difficult to win games.
Let's this question from Jamie Wyman, who says, what do the 49ers do next? Do they draft or trade for a quarterback, and do they fire the coaches? I think we've addressed the coaches stuff before, because we both obviously have you know, a lot of support for Jim Tomsula and what he's done over the years. But in terms of the quarterback, Jeff, they may try and draft a quarterback. But I think it's important if people remember, you know, there aren't many trades for quarterbacks in the NFL. And if you're going to address the quarterback position in free agency, let's just look at last year. You're looking at the Josh McCowns of the world, the Brian Hoyers, the Ryan Fitzpatrick, Matt Cassel. I mean, to expect to... These franchise quarterbacks, if a team gets them, they don't let them go. So I think it's going to have to be the draft.
Yeah, and I must take it a step further and say they don't even have to be franchise quarterbacks. They just have to be decent quarterbacks, and they don't let them go. Because that's just, I mean, they're so very, very few of them available. They've got to look to the draft. But again, when you look to the draft, that's the speculative market when you talk about, can the guy make it as an NFL quarterback? And there are some good ones coming out this season, and we'll talk about it when we get into the draft shows, but there are some good quarterbacks coming out this year. Do they fit the NFL model? College football has changed so much. There's so much zone read. There's so much spread. There's so many things that make it tougher to evaluate a quarterback, single field reads, all that stuff, unless that's what you're going to commit yourself to doing as a football team. So I think it's going to be interesting to watch.
All right. Good stuff, Jeff. That's everything for Inside the Huddle this week in association with SkySports.com and NFL UK. Jeff, just want to wish you a happy Thanksgiving, mate.
Hey, same to you and your family and everybody, all our listeners in the UK and everywhere else where people, you know, download us on iTunes. It's awesome to be able to do this. Next week, Neil, best part about next week is I'll be sitting right across the table from you, and we'll be doing it live from London.
Absolutely, and if that was the case today, you'd be helping me out of my chair right now. So until then, hopefully I'll have made it back to my desk by next week. Until then, say goodbye, Coach.
Aloha.